Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to another rendition of the About That podcast with me, your host, your favorite geek psychologist, your favorite pop culture enthusiast, your favorite queen of the nerds, Dr. Vanessa Hintz. And today, beautiful people, our subject matter is one of my favorite things of ever. Those tall, statuesque, lumbering pieces of flannel. I, of course, am talking about none other than Sam and Dean Winchester. Thank you so much for joining me for yet another supernatural spotlight. So, as some of you may know, I'm going through and documenting my rewatch season by season, and I am excited to chat with you all further about some of the lessons, the messages, the awesomeness, the not-so-awesomeness from season four. So season four of Supernatural originally aired on the CW beginning September 18th, 2008, and running through May 14th of 2009, and according to Rotten Tomatoes, on the whole, season four of Supernatural is ranked at an 88% by critics. The audience score is much lower, which I think is very interesting. We're not going to talk about that, but just very, very interesting. I think the audience score was like a 67%. And I'm just like, what? Like, I don't know what, whatever. Nonetheless, according to an August 2023 Screen Rant article, of all of the seasons of Supernatural, season four is actually what they would categorize as the second best, right after season five. So for those of you who may or may not know, the first five seasons of Supernatural were essentially Eric Kripke's original sort of story. He had intended for those first five seasons to be like the beginning and the end, sort of like a standalone story. And luckily for us, we got 10 more seasons after that. But nonetheless, the first five seasons are sort of, I think, heralded in a different way than the others. Not better or worse, just different. So more specifically, within season four, which included 22 episodes, which tended to be about the average of Supernatural throughout its run. But according to IMDb, the highest rated episodes of season four, interestingly enough, were the first and the last. So episode one was ranked the highest at a 9.4. That was the episode titled Lazarus Rising, followed very closely by the season finale of season four, episode 22, called Lucifer Rising, which was rated at a 9.3. On the other end of that spectrum, sadly, friends, the lowest rated episodes of season four, both coming in at a whopping 7.9, would be episode 11, Family Remains, which I'm actually going to talk about in further detail in a few moments, so whatever. And also episode 12, which was titled Chris Angel is a Douchebag. And so, what was season four about? We saw at the end of season three, after an unsuccessful attempt to stop the demon heavy hitter Lilith, Dean, unfortunately, very sadly, very just grotesquely, in my opinion, was killed and he was sent to hell. There was a very, very sad scene in the season three finale. Dean dead in Sam's arms. There were tears. It was snotty. It was just like really, really sad. Very intense. And you all heard me say in the season three spotlight, that final shot of season three where we see sort of Dean chained in hell is still, in my opinion, one of the most terrifying images of the entire series. It just, especially by, you know, early 2000s standards, it was intense, right? So the end of season three, Dean is in hell, Sam is distraught, enter season four. So just to give an overview of season four, because there was a lot going on, so I'm going to try to give the highlights so that this is not like 4 hours long, but probably most notably, Castiel and all of the other angels enter the chat in season four. Season four, episode one, Castiel the Angel has one of the greatest TV entrances of all time. Again, especially for 2008. I think his entrance was phenomenal. I mean, there were lights, his wings, like it was beautiful. It was beautiful, beautiful cinematic television. So we learn early on that Castiel is actually the angel who rescued Dean from hell, or as Castiel likes to say, pulled him from perdition. The first episode of season four, Dean actually just escapes a hole in the ground. He crawls out of a hole in the ground, which if you're claustrophobic, oh my goodness. And he reunites with Sam and Bobby. And through the course of the first episode, they learn that this angel is the person who pulled him out of hell and is the reason that he is alive. And the reason that they pulled him out of hell was so that he could help them fight this war against the demons. Because the demons are attempting to free Lucifer from hell to start the apocalypse. Just all bad, all bad. And so I think at this point, Dean has been gone for some months. And so while he was gone, Sam was just acting all out of pocket. He was just on one, turned up. He's still hanging out with this demon, Ruby, who is teaching him how to do stuff. Most notably, he is drinking demon blood. It's as gross as it sounds. Because when he does so, he gets these really gnarly psychic powers where he can exorcise demons basically with his mind. Without to Sam's credit, for lack of a better word, he feels like this is a good thing because he can exorcise demons from people's bodies without killing the people that they're sort of possessing. And so Sam has rationalized all of this in his mind. I'm using this demon blood so I can get strong so that when it's time to kill Lilith, because again, at this, before Dean comes back, Sam is like on this mission to kill Lilith because Lilith killed Dean. Dean's back. Sam still wants to kill Lilith. It's like a whole mess. So throughout season four, things are really, really tense between these brothers, between Sam and Dean. I mean, it is like you can cut that tension with a knife, a blade, an angel blade, a demon blade, whatever you want. It's tense, right? So after their initial happy, albeit hilarious, reunion, when Dean returns from hell, again, things are tense because Dean realizes that Sam acting, he acting a little bit out of pocket. You're acting some kind of way, sir. What's going on here? In the second to last episode of season four, the brothers have probably the most intense fight that we've seen at this point throughout the series, where they're literally just beating each other's asses. And it is one of the most, I think, gut-wrenching to this point. Even, you think about the end of season two, Sam dies, the end of season three, Dean dies. This to me was very intense. Emotionally, when you think about how much of Supernatural revolves around the relationship between Sam and Dean, and to see them just fighting, and Dean says to Sam, "If you walk out that door, don't ever come back." And Sam leaves, like tear. It was so intense. So this is the second to last episode, and you're like, "Damn, Sam, for real? You just gonna just be out here?" At the end of the season, spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear, please stop listening. But spoiler alert, at the end of the season, Sam is again intent on using his demon blood juiced up psychic powers to kill Lilith, and he does. He goes full black-eyed demon to exorcise Lilith with his mind. And after he does so, his joy is short-lived because essentially he learns that Ruby was tricking him all along. She wanted Sam to kill Lilith because Lilith's death is actually the final seal on Lucifer's prison. So once Lilith dies, technically Lucifer is released from hell, and Sam, because of his shenanigans, has triggered the apocalypse. The end of season four. So season four ends on this note where Lucifer is going to rise, I guess is what you would say, to the earth. And the apocalypse has begun. So that is season four, in the most condensed way possible. Some things that I'll just highlight from the season that I think it's important to keep in mind, particularly as we move forward in this conversation. In episode three of season four, titled In the Beginning, Castiel actually sends Dean back in time to 1973 to do something. with his parents. Like, I don't ever remember what the exact directions that were given, but essentially, Dean is engaging with his parents back in the day, in the 70s. And we learn sort of more about their family's history with hunting, which for a lot of folks, again, that storyline doesn't necessarily track throughout the rest of the series and all these things. So I think it's important. I think it's important for this point of the story to be knowledgeable about, again, how it was actually Mary's family who was into hunting, and the reason that Sam was visited by the yellow-eyed demon in the pilot episode was because in 1973 Mary made a deal with this demon to save John's life. It's just like a whole mess, like The Young and the Restless. This is just a lot of moving parts, but it's important to note that we learn that. And again, I think this is the first time that there's time travel in the series, so that's noteworthy. Also, in episode 19 of the season, which I'll talk about further, we're introduced to Adam Winchester, the long-lost half-brother, John's other son. And so I'm going to talk much more about that, but that was very important, not only to the story, but I think to, again, some of the dynamics that I'm going to talk about a little bit later. And the last thing I'll say just overarchingly about season 4 is we are introduced to elements in this season that ostensibly never go away. So the things that become sort of staples about Supernatural moving forward, like up through the rest of the 15 seasons, the angels, Chuck the Prophet, Lucifer, all of these things that are sort of synonymous, I think, with the series moving forward are introduced in this season. So again, I think that, again, as I mentioned, these first 5 seasons are, I don't know, again, they're just sort of heralded in their own way. And I think that this is why there's so much richness in these first 5 seasons. And again, things that set the trajectory for the series moving forward. And so before I move into putting my doctor hat on and talking more specifically about, again, messaging or lessons, I want to just highlight some of my favorite and least favorite moments of season 4. So starting with favorites, I'm going to answer like a politician and say there are just too many to count. There's so many amazing things about this season. What I think is sort of thematically interesting about this season and what I really appreciated is that one thing that I think Supernatural does so well, first and foremost, is balancing humor and comedy with things that are super, super serious. Like, super serious. And I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes when I talk about some of my favorite episodes. So that's the one thing that I think just about this season was, you know, when my dear friend Dr. Shelley Clevenger and I talked about season 3, part of what was very intense about that season was how heavy it was. And I think season 4 is equally as heavy, and it is also balanced with humor in a way that you almost miss the heaviness because the, like, things are just so hilarious, right? So I think that is sort of one of my favorite overarching things about this season. And secondly, which I'm going to talk about much more specifically, I think this season invites both and. I think the brilliance of Eric Kripke, the brilliance of Supernatural is the disillusionment of either or. Like, we live in a complex both and world. And I think this season is, it so beautifully showcases that, right? So that would be my favorite thing about this season. My least favorite, I'm going to talk about this more specifically, but that whole demon blood thing, again, I think that it was very necessary for the storyline. And I don't dislike the storyline. I think watching it was a bit intense. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later about why I think that that's the case. So, but secondly, one of my least favorite things about this season was Alistair the demon. Like, I just could not with him. I know he was played by a couple of different people, but he was just annoying AF. And again, made sense for the storyline. Everything about his character made sense. It just wasn't my favorite. It wasn't my favorite, particularly, the second actor that they had playing Alistair, and the whole scene with him like Dean torturing him, and it was just I wasn't here for it. I wasn't here for it. Again, it made sense in the story. The story flowed cool. Just wasn't my favorite. Just wasn't my favorite, right? And so the first thing I want to sort of talk about with regard to what I think is so beautifully demonstrated in season four, particularly with the introduction of the angels. But what I feel like, again, Supernatural is so good at, like it does so masterfully, is to introduce the complexities of morality. Morality is a matter of perspective. So what is just, what is right, what is good, what is, you know, insert adjective, is a matter of perspective. And so I think, very generally speaking, right, when we are introduced to the angels, anybody who grew up in organized religion, Christianity specifically, because again, this is a very Judeo-Christian sort of framework, but anybody who grew up in sort of that context of organized religion, or even understanding the word, the definition of the word angel, there's an assumption that angels are good, right? That angels are good. They're here to, you know, just promote wellness and health for all people, right? And very quickly, when the angels are introduced, we learn that that is indeed not the case. We learn that the angels sort of follow this very strict protocol, for lack of a better word, that leaves very little room for dissension, right? And I think we see that throughout season four. And so does that mean that the angels are not good? I would argue, again, that's a matter of perspective. So we see that for many of the angels that we meet, right? Even Castiel in these very early seasons, Uriel, like all of these other angels who are, quote, following the program, they would absolutely say that, yes, they're good. They're doing good. They're doing what needs to be done, right? Very Thanos style. I'm doing what needs to be done. And if you are not of that mindset, if you are not sort of rooted in this way of thinking, this Judeo-Christian mind, whatever, right? If you are not following the program that these angels are following, would you say that they were good, that they were moral, that they were just? Likely not. And Dean's defiance throughout the season as it relates to the angels and what they're ordering him to do, I think, is a great example of this. So from his perspective, arguably, are these sort of upstanding moral characters? Probably not. There's a quote that I love from episode 7 titled, "It's the Great Pumpkin, Sam Winchester." One of the most awesome episodes of the season, Halloween related. Nonetheless, that's not important right now. Dean says, "There's nothing more dangerous than some a-hole that thinks he's on a holy mission." And so, again, I think it's important to understand the relativity of morality, particularly, again, as it's displayed in Supernatural, but I would argue in life in general, right? Because something is just and moral from your perspective, is it universal? And I think that with the angels, that's what we see, right? Like what they believe is what everybody should believe. What they believe is right because they say it so, because they're following God's orders. And again, we see with Anna, we see with Castiel, when things start to, you know, when it seems like they, you know, the Kool-Aid ain't mixing right, you know, how they sort of, it's difficult to comprehend, right? What do I do if these orders, this way of thinking that I followed my entire life, I start to question, I don't know what to do. So again, very beautifully done. I think very, very applicable to life. How many of us still operate in the same space, in the same way of thinking, in the same manner of the household that we grew up in? And maybe yes, maybe no. There's not a right or wrong way to be, right? How many of us, you know, growing up, maturing, realize that maybe things that we were told when we were younger, things that we were meant to believe, were not aligning with the person that we are now, right? And again, that's not good, bad, or otherwise. That is just, again, I think indicative of the fact that morality is complex and it's all about perspective. And so There are a few other episodes that I want to highlight. One, because these were just like my favorite episodes of the season. And I think that they, too, sort of underscore this concept that I'm talking about, right? And the first episode I want to talk about is episode 5, titled Monster Movie. And me and my horror movie loving heart just gushed at this episode, right? I love everything about it. It was shot in black and white. I don't know if that's the correct terminology. It was in black and white. I don't know if you shoot in black and white. Whatever, it's in black and white. The intro was absolutely amazing. It was very much like a classic monster movie. Like, I just loved everything about it. I just loved everything about the episode, the classic monster elements. Everything about it, just chef's kiss, right? Pertinent to what we've been talking about with regard to perspective. So the monster, and I'm doing air quotes, in this episode is in fact a shapeshifter who has, I think like many of the monsters, a very sad backstory. And this, you know, Sam and Dean learned that this shapeshifter is ostensibly like making his own monster movie. He's shifting into these various classic monsters, werewolf, Dracula, all these different things. And essentially we learn in sort of like the final standoff at the end of the episode that this monster, this shapeshifter, he says that he wants his movie to end differently. He wants his movie to end where the monster wins and gets the girl. And I'm going to read this quote verbatim from the episode because, again, it, to me, is, again, one of those instances in which Supernatural, really, you think you know, and then you don't. And so when the monster is sort of, I think at this point, the monster is, has like taken a woman hostage and he's talking about, I don't know. I don't remember what point of the episode this is, but Dracula, we'll call him Dracula, says, real is being born this way, different. Real is having your dad call you monster. It's the first time you hear the word. And he tries to beat you to death with a shovel. Everywhere I ran, everywhere I tried to hide, people found me, dragged me out, attacked me, called me freak, called me monster. Then I found them, the great monsters. In their movies, they were strong. They were feared. They were beautiful. And now I am like them, commanding, terrifying. End quote. So as a therapist, this just, it even reading that out loud, it breaks me, right? Because how many times have I worked with someone, worked with a child, worked with a person who has been neglected, abused, because they were different, because they were, you know, they were, quote, less than in some way. Only to then become the thing that they once feared or that they once hated, right? And I think that this is, again, that whole monologue that I just read, right, was inserted into an episode that was so campy. Again, it was in black and white. It was so campy, and it was, again, hilarious, right? And that I just read, that is some real shit, right? A child almost beaten to death by their parents, by their father, out on the streets trying to survive, right? I'm just trying to be. I don't want to be scared anymore. I don't want to be a victim anymore. So what is the opposite of that? I want to be powerful. I want to be scary. I want to be the thing. I want to be the person that others fear. How often do we see that in everyday life? Hurt people hurt people. I know you've heard that before. I know you've heard that phrase before, right? And this is an example of that. And in the midst of the showdown, you know, I think Sam, he usually is the more level-headed one. You know, he's basically like, hey, you can't be out here killing people though, right? And again, there's a line, right? Hurt people, yes. And it doesn't mean it's okay, right? It doesn't mean it's okay. And so, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Again, it's a matter of perspective. So from Dracula's perspective, he was protecting himself. He was no longer being a victim. He was now becoming a victimizer, which again is not okay. We're not saying it's okay. From a trauma-informed perspective, though, it makes sense. It makes sense that he got to this space. The next episode, I want to talk about a fan favorite, a cult classic, episode 6 of season 4 titled Yellow Fever. Why is this a cult classic? Why is this a fan favorite? Because this is the episode, my dear friends, where we get the famous Dean scream. That was scary. We get that. We also, at the end of the episode, are treated to a Jensen Ackles Eye of the Tiger lip sync moment, which again, absolutely amazing, iconic, all the things, right? Nonetheless, in this episode, Dean is afflicted with ghost sickness, and he essentially just becomes scared of everything. He's just scared of everything. That's why we get the scream. He doesn't want to drive fast, like all these different things. It's absolutely hilarious because it's such a digression from the Dean that we typically see, right? It's hilarious, absolutely hilarious. And yet, the showrunners and the creators and all of their genius, right smack dab in the middle of all that hilarity, they insert one, again, of the saddest backstories for the monster. And again, I'm using monster in quotes. So in this instance, the monster, quote, is a ghost, a person who was ostensibly killed for being different, for being misunderstood. So the ghost who's haunting this factory place, his name is Luther. He was, quote, the town freak. But a woman who worked at this factory where Luther was, I think, the custodian, the janitor, was very kind to him. And because she, unlike anyone else in his life, showed him kindness, he became infatuated with her. To the point that he was drawing all these pictures of her and hanging them up in his office in the factory. This woman's husband discovered this. And when this woman vanished, this woman's husband came after Luther. And him and a group of his friends, I believe, chained Luther to a truck and basically dragged him up and down the road in front of this mill where he then died. And so what is happening in the course of the episode is that Dean is essentially dying the same way that Luther did, but just very slowly. And so in order to save Dean from a certain untimely death, Bobby and Sam have to team up to essentially kill this ghost Luther in the same exact way he died before. So basically they kill him to death by fear. So they put a chain around his neck, an enchanted chain, and basically kill him all over again. And so what I appreciate about this episode is that both Sam and Bobby acknowledge explicitly, and I think even in their actions, that they don't feel good about what it is that they have to do. Like, they know that they have to do this, you know, kill this ghost so that Dean can, you know, go on and go forth and be great. Like, they know that it must be done, and they acknowledge that it's horrible. They acknowledge that the way that this man died is horrible. They acknowledge that they don't want to do this. And so, again, I think this, for me, because again, when I think about what I remembered from this episode the first time I watched it, again, it's the Dean scream, it's Eye of the Tiger. And now watching it again and again, seeing how beautifully and how complex the story is, love it. This is something that I feel like this story and the one that I just referenced, I could use to teach my students about trauma-informed care. Because a trauma-informed practitioner, someone who is just trauma-informed generally, Sam and Bobby in this instance are trauma-informed. They understand we have to do this thing and it sucks because this man Luther should never have been killed like this. This man Luther should never have been treated like this. And it makes sense that he's pissed now. It absolutely makes sense that he's pissed. He was killed and nobody paid for it, right? And so again, beautifully, beautifully, beautifully done. The next episode, yet another cult classic, yet another fan favorite. And I am talking about episode 13 of season 4 titled After School Special. And the reason that this too is a fan favorite a cult classic is because this is the episode, My Beautiful Humans, where we see Dean dressed as a PE teacher with the dodgeball and just all of the joy, hilarity, awesomeness that comes from that. This is from episode 13, After School Special. So in this episode, again, not only do we see Dean with them little shorts on, playing dodgeball with these kids, Sam and Dean are investigating a case at their old high school. So they went to like a gajillion and one high schools. And then this just happened to be one that they went to sort of in the course of their nomadic travel with John when they were younger. But ostensibly, we find out that this is a case of ghost possession. So a ghost is possessing students at the school and essentially going after bullies. And what we find out is that the, quote, monster, the ghost in this case is actually a kid from Sam's past. So when Sam and Dean were attending the school, Sam befriended a boy at the school named Barry, and Barry was being bullied by a child named Dirk. And so we find out in this whole very sad, dramatic fashion that Dirk is actually the ghost that is possessing all these kids and going after the bully. And so we learn in the course of the episode that Sam's friend Barry, whom he befriended when he was at the school and helped out with, you know, the bully, and then Sam left. We learn that Barry actually died by suicide shortly after Sam left the school. So at first there's a thought that Barry is likely the ghost possessing people. That is proven false, and we find out that it was indeed the child Dirk who was bullying both Barry and Sam. And we learn in the course of the episode that this child Dirk was actually, again, someone who had experienced trauma himself. We learn that he was grieving. He watched his mother die of cancer. He then turned to drugs and alcohol and actually died before he graduated high school. And so Dirk's father tells Sam and Dean that Dirk had a rough time and that he was actually bullied and called, quote, Dirk the Jerk, which is actually a name that Sam gave him in this whole like schoolyard fight situation. And so, again, I think this is an example where on the surface, right, you see little Sam and his friend Barry being bullied by this, you know, bigger, seemingly just evil child, right? And then when you pull back the layers and learn that this was a child who was also struggling after seeing his mom die, he was struggling with his own insecurities around food and around, you know, not having enough money, etc. That episode was heavy, heavy to me. One, understanding the, you know, insidious nature of bullying and how cruel schools can be, how cruel kids can be, and how so often so many of them suffer in silence. I think that was heavy to me. And then the way that this, you know, ghost, the anger that he had when he came back and he was possessing and killing all these people, it was intense. And again, this is sort of couched in between all of these funny shenanigans, Dean as the PE teacher, all, you know, all of these things. And again, I think is a tremendous example of the power of perspective. And there was in the final confrontation in the episode, Dean or Sam is talking to Dirk's ghost, and he essentially says to him, like, I took out my anger and frustration on you instead of just talking to you. And how often have we seen something like that happen, right? We're so quick to judge without first being curious. That's a Walt Whitman, aka Ted Lasso quote, be curious, not judgmental. How much pain could we mitigate if we approached difference, if we approached others with curiosity as opposed to judgment? The last episode I'm going to talk about, episode 11, which again, Family Remains, which IMDb was not a fan of. I absolutely was, one, because it was like a scary movie. Like, I think, again, Supernatural for me, there are episodes that I distinctly remember because of the horror elements, and this is one of them. I absolutely feel like I was watching a scary movie. There were so many, like, urban legend elements in it. I just loved everything about it, right? But this episode sort of featured a family that moved to this, like, I don't know, some country place, Nebraska, something like that. This house in the middle of the country, and, you know, scary things ensue. Sam and Dean arrive. They at first think it's a ghost, but they actually learn that the, quote, monsters are human beings. They are people who were abused by the previous owner of the house. So there was a woman who was raped by her father, impregnated as a result of said sexual assault, who gave birth to, I think, a son who, again, was also her brother. Everyone believed that this woman had hung herself, which was actually not true. The father just forced her to sort of live in the walls of the home to hide all of this abuse that was going on, what have you. So essentially the, quote, monsters in this episode were two abused children, I would say. And the first person that they killed was their abuser, right? Their tormentor. And then this family moves into this house that they got for cheap. If you ever get a house that is way below market value, it's probably haunted. So you should just look the other way. Hello, Amityville. Anyways, moving forward, what I appreciated about, again, the complexity of this episode is all of the evil, the monsters that Sam and Dean face, every time they are confronted with, quote, human evil, it just does not compute to them, right? Dean always says, he's like, humans. It's humans. Humans make no sense to me. And again, I think it's because, like I've been sort of talking about for the last several moments, morality is complex. Human existence is complex. It's a lot. It's a whole lot. Again, how I don't condone violence, and I understand why that woman killed the man that abused her. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm saying I understand. I understand how you would get to the point where you felt like that was the only answer, right? Where you felt like you had to do something. And like many, like all of the episodes I've talked about up until this point, it made sense. And it's, again, to me, that's what being trauma-informed is. It makes sense. That is what understanding another person's perspective is. Again, understanding and validating a perspective is not affirming. It's not me saying like, yeah, you should kill him and you should kill him again. That's not what I said. Validation is I understand. I understand how you got to this place. It makes sense. It doesn't mean it's right. It means it makes sense. So, in summary, season 4, in so many beautiful and magnificent ways, really calls us in to think about perspective, to think about moral complexity, to be trauma-informed. Thank you, thank you, thank you. As a psychologist, as a therapist, as a human being who wants to live in a space, who wants to live in a world that is filled with curiosity as opposed to judgment, thank you, Supernatural. This is why we love you. So the last thing I want to say about season 4, and I sort of prefaced it early on, I want to talk a little bit about both and. And again, both and, similar to what we talked about, invites curiosity. Yeah, but, or either or, invites judgment. It invites a distinguishing that, again, can be judgmental. And again, it's not to say that that is bad. It's just different, right? And so what I was particularly struck by, and again, on this instance of my rewatch, and I had to also remind myself that this season was shot 15 years ago at the time of this recording, right? And that was a very different time in the world. And, right? So I'm going to already start both anding. And I'm going to specifically talk about Dean. Because again, this season, I'm a Dean gal through and through. And I think on this rewatch, I'm like, Sam, I feel like he doesn't get as much love as he deserves, right? But then this is not the season to be talking about it with that whole blood thing. So nonetheless, what was interesting to me about Dean, and again on this rewatch, is that I think I noticed more so than before how much of his behavior I didn't like. Specifically, he makes some pretty, what I would consider gross, comments about like teenage girls. So when they're undercover at their high school, again in episode 13, when they're working sort of this these Halloween cases in episode 7, they are working cases around teenagers, right? And I think at this point, Dean is like 30, almost 30 years old. And he's making these comments about these young girls. Do you want to know which of them are legal? You know, whatever, right? Stuff like that that's like super gross. And I think, I don't know if I didn't notice it the first time or if I'm just like, you know, hyper focused on it now. But it was something I noticed, right? And I'm like, this is not cool. Like, this is absolutely not cool. And I started to think about why might I not have noticed those things initially, right? Is it because I didn't want to tarnish my opinion of Dean, right? Is it because I didn't want to negate all of the things I love about him, right? In acknowledging that he is pretty gross and I wouldn't want him around my teenage child that I don't have, does that negate all the other things that I like about him? Similarly, again, in episode 19, titled Jump the Shark, we meet Adam for the first time. Adam is John's other son, and we learn that Adam had a very different type of relationship with John than Sam and Dean. And Dean just does not handle it well. Like, he essentially hates Adam for no reason, and it's just a whole hot mess. And so even that incident, right, like that Dean's way of relating, I'm like raising an eyebrow, like, why are you acting like that? You know, what did this person do to you? If you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at your daddy. And that is where I think the lesson is, right? And what the lesson is here, not only for Dean in this instance with Adam, but also in my own experience of like, why is it okay that to me that Dean is saying these gross things? Why is it okay that he's acting like this? What I want to introduce now, friends, is the concept of cognitive dissonance. And according to the American Psychological Association Dictionary of Psychology, cognitive dissonance is an unpleasant psychological state that results from an inconsistency between two or more elements in a, quote, cognitive system, aka thoughts. So essentially, there are two thoughts that are inconsistent or conflicting, and that makes me feel some kind of way. When you experience this inconsistency in thoughts, when you experience these conflicting thoughts, you get turned up. You feel a way like, this doesn't make sense. Now I'm like aroused, not in a sexual way. I'm aroused as in I'm turned up. Like, something is happening here. And so for me to de-arouse myself, calm myself, oh my God, de-arouse. For me to calm myself, I have to make one of those thoughts go away. I have to make them consistent in some way. And so for me, perhaps the first time that I watched this, I didn't want to not like Dean. So I let all those gross things that he said about those teenage girls slide, right? Because if I acknowledge that Dean, again, was pervy, that would make me like him less, and I don't want to do that. That's cognitive dissonance. I think that we see the same with Dean, right? For Dean to acknowledge that Adam had this very positive experience with John, Dean would have to acknowledge that John was capable of being that kind of father. He just wasn't that type of father to him and Sam. So he would have to acknowledge that his father was capable of doing something and chose not to do it for him. And because Dean has insecurities and self-loathing, that was probably too much for him, right? So instead of owning and acknowledging that his father was capable of being a, quote, regular dad, capable of showing love to his son, he just didn't do it for him. Instead of accepting that, Adam must be lying. This is some bullshit. Who is this guy? I'm going to take out all my anger on him. Your dad's not here for you to take the anger out on him, so it all is going to Adam, right? And that's not fair to Adam. That's not fair to Adam, right? And I think similarly, throughout the course of, I think the series, generally speaking, because I think Dean has a lot of problematic behaviors, right? And not to say he needs to be perfect. I'm not saying that. Nope. I'm not saying that at all. Please don't come for me. There are a lot of problematic behaviors. And because of everything that he's gone through, because of the trauma, because he is, quote, hero, because he's willing to lay his life on the line to save others, I think we let those things slide. And again, I'm not saying we should or we shouldn't. And I'm saying it's right, it's wrong. I think I'm saying it's noteworthy, right? It's noteworthy to think about. Moving into the rest of this rewatch, I think that that is something for me that, again, now that I can anticipate what is happening, I can anticipate the changes in the story. I think my focus, again, not only for these sort of spotlight conversations, but in my rewatch, generally speaking, is to focus on those interpersonal dynamics more. I think my first time through the series, you're just trying to figure, like, what is going to happen? There's so much going on. And now I would say these interpersonal dynamics are important. Just something to think about. I still love Dean. And that's a both and, to bring this conversation full circle, right? We can see Dean as a whole, complex, flawed, beautiful human being. He says gross stuff. That's not cool, sir. It's not cool for you to be a grown ass man talking about these teenage girls. That's not cool. And it is amazing that you died and went to hell to save us, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, we can both end that shit. And that is how you kick cognitive dissonance in the face, bro. That's how you kick it, uppercut it. Roundhouse, Patrick Swayze, Roadhouse, kick that shit in the face, is by both and. Mic drop, point blank, period. And so, my friends, we have come to the end of our time together, to the end of this conversation. And my favorite part, Supernatural Season 4, about that. So, as always, I'm going to leave you all with my compliment sandwich. About specific to season 4, something good, something not so good, and something awesome. Starting with something good, Bobby is the real MVP. Bobby is amazing. Bobby is a gangster. I love everything about him. We see, particularly in this season, right? Like, Bobby is just, he cold with it. And I think in this season, he showcased all of that, right? In the first episode, Lazarus Rising, when resurrected Dean show up at his doorstep, he didn't just let him in. He didn't just hug him like, hey, what's up? Nah, he came at him with holy water. He came at him with a knife. You're not about to just come into my house. I don't know who you are. Cold. Episode 14, Sex and Violence. Sam and Dean are under the spell of, I don't even remember the name of the monster. I just know the actor was Hoyt from True Blood. And they were like, he was like a succubus, but not really. I don't know. But they were just like so devoted to him. They were going to kill each other because he wanted them to. And here come Bobby. Like, nah, we're not about to do that today, fam. And then in the season finale, when Dean is being all weird about his fight with Sam, who told him what he needed to hear, but not necessarily what he wanted to hear? OG Bobby. Cold with it. Bobby is amazing. I referenced this at the outset, but something that I didn't particularly care for. Again, and it's not because I don't think it was good. It was because it was difficult for me. And that was Sam's whole encounter, Sam's whole issue with this demon blood situation. It was very much, I think, akin to addiction. I think that's how they played it in the series. We saw when he, you know, was attempting to detox and how difficult that was, not only for him, but for the people who loved him. And I think, so that was difficult. I think also his rationalizing around why he was doing it, I think was difficult. And for me, it just it hit a little bit too close to home. Having my own experiences with loved ones who had issues with addiction, working with people who have issues with addiction, working with people who have loved ones who have issues with addiction, it was intense, right? And again, made sense for the story. I think it was amazing for the story. I wouldn't change it. And I want to be knowledgeable and transparent about the fact that that was very difficult for me. And the last thing that I'll say in terms of amazingness from season four is the way that Jensen played Dean, particularly as it relates to his survivor's guilt, right? And according to the American Psychological Association Dictionary of Psychology, survivor's guilt is remorse or guilt for having survived a catastrophic event when others did not, or for not suffering the ills that others had to endure. This is a common reaction stemming in part from a feeling of having failed to do enough to prevent this event or to save those who did not survive. So Dean was rescued out of a whole hell, the whole eternal damnation, fire and brimstone. He was rescued, right? And throughout the course of season four, and really throughout the series, generally speaking, but particularly throughout the course of season four, we see him asking why? Why me? Why am I saved and everybody else has to suffer? And I think this adds so much complexity to his character. I think Jensen plays it beautifully. And again, we sort of, this survivor's guilt and this, again, self-loathing and insecurity stays with him throughout. And I think, you know, we saw aspects of this before season four. I think what changed about season four is that he was actually raised from hell. So you were actually going through this horrible thing where you were torturing these people, these souls in hell for years and years and years, and you were just taken from that, right? And I think that that part of the story, again, it hurts me talking about it, right? Like, to think about the tremendous amount of trauma and to think about that guilt and what it must be like to carry that around. Again, I think that also adds to the complexity of Jensen's character. It adds to, like we were talking about with the monsters in the stories, right? It adds to his, like, the trauma-informedness of him as a character. So, yeah, he doesn't talk about stuff. Yeah, he's kind of like an asshole who bottles up his emotions and doesn't know how to process things in an appropriate way. Think about all of that he's carrying, right? So, again, beautiful job, masterfully done. And, friends, I thank you so much for spending this time with me, engaging in conversation about, y'all know, one of my most favorite things of ever. And until next time, good people, I wish you and your families safety, health, and joy. Be well, y'all.